Welcome to another episode of the Tactical Leadership Podcast, where we focus on building better businesses. I believe in order to be the best leader that you can be, you must be willing to be the first follower and have a servant mentality when you're in a leadership position. If you want to be the best leader that you possibly can be sure to stay tuned and listen to industry leaders and hear how they built winning cultures in their own businesses.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Tactical Friday. You heard from him this past Monday, and David Fiveco is back to tell us the tips to build an effective team within your organization. David, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Really enjoyed the session on Monday and looking forward to talking about Tactical Friday.
Man, I'm excited about this because a lot of times we talk about personal leadership or self-leadership or leading an organization, but rarely have we really discussed how to build a team. And as a leader, how to be an effective leader of a team and make that cohesiveness, which we talked about Monday, that experiential leadership and that team building with the things you offer. And you mentioned you have five tips for the audience. You have five things that people can work on. This is how you build effective teams. Share those five tips with us, and let's talk a little bit more about how you can create this environment for great teams to operate in an organization.
So think about the best team that you've ever been on, and then think for a little while about the worst team that you were ever on. And between those two, you know, we've been on a lot of sort of average to above average teams, but there's great teams out there and there are bad teams out there. And I hope everybody out there that's listening has been on both of them so that they've seen and experienced the difference. The five things that I think that make a great team is they really first have to have a goal, whatever that is. They need a goal, something that they're shooting for. Then they need to have a roadmap of how to get there, a plan, whatever you want to call it. And then it's important to have a scoreboard that tracks the progress on how they're getting there. And, you know, it's easy to see with sports teams, you know, because, you know, hey, the goal is to go to the, you know, the NBA championship, the roadmap, you know, they're going to play a certain way. The scoreboard, they get to see, you know, wins and losses each over the season and in the playoffs and all that. Then you've got to have a culture that provides the guardrails for that team to operate. What is acceptable within that team? What's the left and right limits? What's acceptable? What's not? And then the final piece is they have to have trust in that team that's built really through what I've seen as shared experiences and hardships. We're both veterans. We both remember those military teams that were really the ones that we were super excited to be on that were high performing. And I always think back that those were created out of shared experiences and hardships, whether it was a JRTC rotation, deployment to Iraq or Afghanistan. But those sort of hard experiences or, you know, an all night movement to daylight that just sort of it was hard. It sucked. It was raining. It was 40 degrees out. But everybody kept putting one foot in front of the other and moving on. And we eventually hit the objective and we were successful. Those kind of experiences are what brings those teams together and does it. Oftentimes in the corporate world, they still have that shared experience or shared heart. Yeah, they worked on this project or they closed this deal, but the shared experience or the shared hardship that really builds those bonds in the team sometimes isn't there. And some teams try to make up for it and, you know, take the group out to you know, get drinks at the local bar on Friday afternoons or other things. But some of those don't provide that same sort of connectivity, right, or a high performing team. I know a lot of groups, you know, a lot of folks here, you know, we're just coming out of the pandemic. One of the things early in the pandemic was this ESPN show called The Last Dance, which covered the Chicago Bulls final championship season. And think about the effort there by the coach to manage those five egos from Scottie Pippen to Michael Jordan to coach, the effort there to manage those egos, create a culture that they could all thrive in, and then they built that trust in the team over the season through their shared experiences, the tough practices, the long road trips, and they eventually end up on top. But think about that as a way, hey, am I creating a team that has those five components? Have I provided a goal? Do I keep talking about that goal? Do we have that plan? Do we have that scoreboard where we're tracking our wins and losses? How's our culture doing? And then do we have those bonds in the team that really has built that trust? That enables us to be connected, we are able to share, and we're able to overcome obstacles that are in our path. Those are things that I think are important. I'm sure you've got some experiences on being on some great teams and bad teams that might be relevant here too.
You know, and it's interesting when you point out people, especially during COVID, hey, let's go out for a drink. Let's take people out and go drink at a bar. Honestly, that's kind of to me, it's one of those like fake team building exercises. Let's go bowling. All right, well, you have two people here, two people there, five people over there. And it's not team cohesiveness that you're working on. It's one of those where you're like, let's all go grab a drink and then ignore each other or only talk to the cliques that we're always in. It's not really forcing that interactivity between everybody, which is really what you're highlighting. And I think that's something when you mention a JRTC rotation, I laughed because I remember Fort Polk and I never want to go back. It was just a terrible experience. But that was also one of the first times I worked with my platoon as an entire platoon. You know, that was one of the first times where we didn't get resupplied for like 10 days. Yeah, we were only in Louisiana, but like at the end of the day, not getting resupplied for 10 days in the woods sucks, right? And there's a different level of connectivity attached to, like you said, hardships, where all of a sudden certain people will step up, other people will not step up or crumble. And it's an amazing way to start highlighting who's a good teammate and who's the undercover cancer that might need to either be coached extra or cut out of the team, because it shows more of the personality. Where if you're doing something like the Kerhi Mountain, all of a sudden you have this person that sits down and says, I give up. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm miserable. You all suck. I hate you for doing this. I hate you for putting us up to this. If you have that person, well, that person's probably doing that day to day during every struggle, right? They're that same person that's probably tearing the team apart, but you never saw it because they hid it from you. And I think that's like a great piece to highlight on that is like when you can get these actual shared experiences with people, this is going to change the dynamic of the team and highlight so many different aspects of different characteristics and great leaders, poor leaders, people that need help in that capacity. And I really want to highlight that because I think that's a great insight attached to what you're accomplishing with everything you're doing.
Yeah. No, thanks, Zach. I made some of that same mistakes as a battalion commander. When I was a battalion commander, we were getting ready to go to Afghanistan. We did group PT with the officers, which was one way that we brought everybody together. And that was really a good team building activity. But I had been bit by the golf bug. I decided that we would do a couple golf outings as groups to try to bring the team together. And as I look back, that's really on my part. The golf outings did not build that team in the way that I wanted it to, because you only bond with the foursome. You know, just like you said, a lot of times they're small cliques. That's why, you know, I developed this Kerhi Mountain leadership experience as a way that a leader can bring their entire team together. They can get to see the entire team in action. They get opportunity to see folks both as leaders and followers. And then they build some trust through the shared hardship. It's not easy to walk up Kerhi Mountain. It's done. It's doable. My 11-year-old daughter has done it, but it's still, you sweat. It's going to be a little bit tough. It's out of your comfort zone. And we're going to push you a little bit more out of your comfort zone by throwing some challenges along the way at you. But those things are what builds the trust and makes a high performing team, because you got to push the organization a little bit out of the comfort zone and bring that whole team together.
I love it.
You can still get hungry in Louisiana if you don't get resupplied for 10 days.
And I get hangry. I'm a fat kid. I want to eat, and MREs don't do it anyways. But when you only get one every other day, it gets miserable over the course of a week, right? Like
it does.
So many factors play into that. And it's something that you never really experience until you experience it, right? Like that's such the valid point of like experiential leadership and training and coaching that you're offering that I think people kind of miss out on, especially during COVID, where I think a lot of leaders kind of checked out. Oh, we're virtual now, so we'll do like a meeting in the morning just to check in. But people have forgotten, like, there's still going to be an experience attached to leadership, even if they're not sitting in the office next to you, right? There's still going to be some sort of connectivity beyond, hey, everybody, how's it going? Why didn't you get this done? All right, you're fired. That's not a good experience for anybody. And that employee experience is just as important as that customer experience attached to the success of your organization.
Right. And virtual makes it harder. It's not impossible. It's tough. It's challenging, but it's not impossible to grow teams during COVID and even if your team continues on remotely. I do think that it becomes a crucial leadership decision for leaders to make, as we go forward, especially in the hybrid work environment, for groups that, you know, have gotten rid of their offices during the pandemic, they have to take a more deliberate approach to those in-person engagements that they have with their team and make them much more valuable. It doesn't necessarily have to be going to Currahee Mountain. You know, I just did an event for a group up in Washington, D.C., where we called it the company Pentathlon. And they split up into two groups. They each had five different events that they had to do. One of the events was they had to go down to the Potomac River and back. One group showed a ton of creativity. I didn't expect this. And they actually paid the golf course $20 to borrow two of their golf carts and drive down to the Potomac. The other group hoofed it down and back. But you know, it was a simple half-day exercise that brought the team together. And one of the events within the Pentathlon was they had to share a story about why they were the leader that they are today. And that's one way that you can do it virtually. You know, it's a tough kind of thing. Folks have to be willing to share. But I learned, I was with half the group. So I got to hear four or five different stories from different leaders in that company about how they became the leader today. And one guy was an immigrant from another country. Another guy was inspired by his brother. And those sort of stories really create connections that you remember. And bring that group closer together as they can, you know, as they've been dealing with things now for the last 2 months since that event. So there's ways to do it. It's not impossible. Would love to get any group out there out to Currahee Mountain and stretch them a little bit. But there are also other options that if anybody wants to talk about them, I'm happy to get on the phone or email and talk to them about how they can do it with their team.
And that leads perfectly into, go ahead and remind the audience, what's the best way to reach out to you, find you, see this content, maybe see what these experiences look like, and then get engaged in it for themselves as well.
Yeah, come to the website, which is www.thefivecodeconsultinggroup.com. I'm also on LinkedIn. You can reach out to me that way, or you can send me an email at david.fivecode@thefivecodeconsultinggroup.com.
Awesome. I love it.
Love to work with your audience. You know, anybody that's out there that needs help, I'm happy to help.
I love it. I love it. David, thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for your insight, for your tactics. I'll make sure all that gets linked over in the show notes. Be sure to check that out. Be sure to head over, check out David and everything he's doing. And overall, my friend, I just appreciate your time today.
No, thanks, Zach. I really appreciate you having me and really enjoy your podcast and all the great things that you're doing for the community, both here in Georgia and across the country.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Tactical Leadership Podcast, and I hope you got a ton of value out of what we talked about today. I also want to remind you that this show is brought to you by Knight Protection Services. If you're a leader in a small to mid-sized business that does $5 to $10 million a year in revenue and want to improve retention costs, which could actually add up to being twice your employee's salary, all through creating a safer work environment and saving up to 25% in insurance costs, be sure to visit knightprotectionllc.com.